We are living in interesting times. I read this article a few weeks ago about cognitive dissonance, which I found very interesting. It said that sometimes we get on a path and we can't get off of this path, because what happens is when we begin to leave the path, we have this cognitive dissonance in our minds because we're being challenged to see the world a different way. And what cognitive dissonance does is it makes us feel uncomfortable, so we turn back to the path we were on. Now, the article is very interesting, but it was only a surface article. Just like a lot of things we find today, we hear a lot of reports about the way things work, psychology and sociology, even in the news and the media, but most of the time they're only speaking on the surface, and they don't go deep enough. You see, this theory of cognitive dissonance was part of a bigger theory called the theory of cognitive balance. The theory of cognitive balance said that we wanted to stay in a state of balance. So we had all of these thoughts and ideas and syllogisms in our mind that consisted of premises that we had about the world and a conclusion we had. One example would be, good people don't kill, I don't kill, therefore I am a good person. Which brings about balance, because everyone wants to be good, and since they're not killing, they're a good person. But then something happens. Say someone breaks into your house and you have to kill that person. And then you have good people don't kill, I killed, I'm a good person. That doesn't work anymore. This is the cognitive balance, imbalance, and the dissonance comes as a result of that imbalance. So it isn't coming to keep us going in the other direction. The dissonance is coming in order to allow us to grow, to move behind the crisis, to expand our minds and our awareness of the way the world is, and to challenge these premises that we have been given by other people that we have accepted all of our lives. But when you're giving easy slogans and easy fixes and surface thinking, it's easy to not do that. It's easy to seek comfort and avoid the dissonance, especially in a society where a lot of our progress has been made in order to avoid discomfort. The mystery schools in the old days and mystical beliefs taught us this all of the time through many stories, through many examples, through many facts. Those religions had gods and goddesses and powers that went with us down into the darkness, that accompanied us through our dissonance. These were the gods that were made into demons and devils and so forth in the modern age through fundamentalist Christianity and other fundamentalist religions, when they were actually parts of ourself that were supposed to nurture us and bring us growth, lead us through the darkness so we could do like the original skeptics did. You see, skeptics, when they started, were not people who said, I don't believe anything and you have to prove it to me. The idea of skepticism was that you would hear an idea and you would not make a decision on whether you believed it or not. You would stay in that place of discomfort, and you'd keep getting more and more information about what was going on, and you'd hold back from making a decision so that your mind would continually expand and get greater and greater until you had all the knowledge possible about whatever the subject was, and then you would decide whether you believed it or not when the evidence really pointed to the fact. So coming to the conclusion was not the most important part. The process was holding off, feeling how the dissonance felt, feeling your reaction to all of the things you were having, hearing and understanding that sometimes you were having reactions that had nothing to do with you, reactions that you had gotten when you were socialized or when you were taught something but had nothing to do with your own thinking. So the skepticism, the school of skepticism, was to help us become whole again, to get rid of these false ideas and premises, and to get rid of the blinders that we have as a society has received through the one tool that probably helped us rise very high, but also has destroyed many of our qualities of life, and that is this idea of either or, up or down, this dualistic idea and trying to apply it to each and everything. And so instead of understanding these great stories and looking at the mystical applications, we are asking if these things happened historically, or if these gods or powers exist, when in actuality they are all very archetypal. They are about the things that are happening within our lives and within us. And the myths that come with them are not about the past at all. And they're not about the future. They are out of time and space. They are about now. And they are different in the heart of each and every human being as they come to know themselves and experience more and more of the world. One story has been coming to me for the last week or so that I'll talk about. This is the story about the goddess Inanna. It is a very interesting story. You have this goddess who is supposed to be the queen of heaven and earth, basically. And something happens to her sister, who is lord of the underworld, to her sister's mate, where he gets killed or destroyed or something, and she is just totally destroyed, and Inanna sees the pain and suffering of her sister. And she says, I have to go down there and do something to help my sister. Now, everyone, of course, in the heavens say, well, you can't go to the underworld. You're crazy. That's not allowed. Her consort says, no, you can't go down there. She just has to suffer. But she says, I'll do whatever I need to do to descend and to help my sister. So she begins her descension down to the underworld. At each level, she has to remove something. She goes through several layers. At the top, when she has to remove her crown that shows her royalty. At each level, seven levels, she has to get rid of something that shows who and what she is, until she ends up down in the nether regions, standing naked before her sister, her awesome, powerful, frightening sister. And she is standing there, helpless before her. And her sister is devastated, not only because she is now mourning for her partner who is dead, but also her own sister, because she knows that her sister did not only come there to comfort her. She knows that anyone who comes to this underworld has issues, and they have to be cleansed. And so, with all of the anguish she feels, she summons the strength to begin to torture Inanna. And she ends up hanging her on a meat hook for 3 days and nights. Now, up in the heavens, nobody knows this is going on, you see. And her consort is up there with a great party, and everybody's having a good time. But there's this one god named Enki, who is the god who goes beneath the underworld and in the heavens. He basically knows everything that's going on everywhere. So Enki finds a way to save Inanna. He takes these two beings and he makes them out of clay, and he breathes the breath of life into these beings, and he sends them down to talk with Inanna's sister. They do something sort of like Rogerian therapy there, where she said, oh, I'm feeling terrible, I'm hurting my sister. Said, yeah, oh, it's just terrible, you're hurting your sister. And what else can I do? I have to cleanse her. Yes, you do have to cleanse her. Yes, you do. And they go through all of this with her over and over for 3 days, and then they help her come to a decision. Her decision is she'll do things a little differently. She will send Inanna back to heaven to be the queen of heaven and earth, and then Dumuzi, her consort, will spend part of the time in the underworld and part of the time in the heavens. And that is the story about Inanna. This story is not only about some goddess back then, though. I think this story is about each and every one of us. It is about our lives. First, I'm going to go way out there, then I'll narrow it down, because my own belief system is way out there. Okay. My theory is that we do not only exist here on Earth. And I'll tell you why my theory is we don't exist here on Earth. According to most philosophies and most sciences and most understandings of the world, there is this theory about life coming up out of the earth, a theory about this Big Bang where all of these planets are created, and on this earth there is this cosmic soup and all kinds of energy moving around. And the idea is that you had this few lipids and a few proteins, and they somehow found a way to create this one cell, this cell that would explode if it held energies too long, and it would just solidify if it didn't hold it long enough. So somehow this cell could release the energy and hold it at the same time long enough to create what we call life. So out of these stars, out of this energy, out of this power of the universe, life is birthed on Earth. And this life, this one cell, carried on through time, throughout time, this one thing, this one secret that was written on the genetic code of this cell that told it how to reproduce itself and how to live and hold on to this life force was passed down through time and space over and over and over and over again until it came to us sitting here in this seats, looking and thinking and feeling. We are that very life force that came out of the beginning of the universe, sitting here, being aware, realizing ourselves, being what many people call the consciousness of the universe, the creative energy of the universe. And within all of the mystery religions and all of the mystics, they've always taught us this over and over again. They say that we are the universe realizing itself. We are that very consciousness of the universe. We are the life energy. And being created in the image of the divine does not mean with two hands and two feet and a head. It means being the creative, aware energy in the universe. Before we came here in these bodies, we existed somewhere and somehow, and some way, something decided that we would get rid of all of those things that marked us as different and descend down into these natural bodies after 2 or 3 months when what is known as the quickening took place. Within the womb, we decided that this consciousness would awaken inside the womb and we would enter into the earth. And my theory is that many of us saw that our brothers and sisters here were suffering. And we, like Ananda said, we have to do something about this. We have to be born into this earth so that we can create a better world and help those who have forgotten what is going on. And that is who I think we are. We are not an accident of birth. I think that we are that creative energy coming into the earth in order to create a better world and in order to help people who've forgotten who and what they are to remember who they are. This is what the mystics thought. This is what the mystery religions were all about. And right now, if we really begin to look at all of the non-fundamentalist religions and non-fundamentalist scientific theories, we find that they are all saying the exact same thing. They are saying that there is this whole field of information and field of intelligence of which everything is a part. They are saying that we are like Indra's net in Hinduism. We are all like a net of beautiful jewels and objects with the reflection of each other being projected out of ourselves, taking in the light of love and pushing that out in a unique manner. We are all one, yes, but we are all separate beings. That is who I think we are. But let's put aside who I think we are and let's look at it through a different lens. According to many of the scientific theories now, we are all data, basically. We are all information, and we consist of information that consists of several different ribbons of energy and light, with the only thing separating us being the fields of energy around us that create sort of a barrier so that we don't all meld together. So according to those theories, you see, we are all one substance in many personas. So even according to scientific theory now, we are all one. And even as we sit here, as we breathe, we are passing out parts of our body into the air, that are being expelled, and we are taking in parts of the other person's body who is next to us and rebuilding our body and cells with the parts of the other people in this room. So in reality, we are created out of each other. So there is no way to deny this. Looking at one idea and one theory and one way of explaining it is no better than looking at all ways of explaining it. That, I think, is the issue, that we have learned that one way of doing things is better than many ways. I'm reminded of a person who was bilingual, and they spoke Spanish and English, and they told me, it's very funny how in the United States we have learned that speaking English is better than speaking two languages. We've learned that speaking one language is better than two. I think that's the way that we begin to see the world now, too. And the blinders I'm talking about is this either-or thing. You either have to be a scientist or you have to be a mystic. You don't.
Right.
Isaac Newton was a great mystic and scientist. Many of the people who discovered the theories that we're talking about were mystics and scientists. Pythagoras was a mystic, very powerful mystic, and the Pythagoras theory was that you could define the universe in numbers. Physics came as a result of Pythagorean theory minus the mystical part. And as long as we are trapped in this idea of dualism, this idea of right and wrong, this idea that we cannot decide on our own fate, but we need other people to do that, we will have the same things that are happening today happening well into the future. And that is basically giving our power away to those who we think of as the specialists and the most knowledgeable, ignoring what our hearts are telling us, and then being led into some dark alleyway where we have to fight and struggle to survive and to get out of it. It's time for us to begin to experience these stories ourselves, and it's time for us to be able to use them for what they really were. Because I myself was surprised when I went to study some yogic philosophy and Hinduism in India, and I found that all of those gods were archetypal images, and all of the worship and all of that was like doing an external form of Jungian analysis. And the people who chose certain gods and worked with them were actually working with their own subconscious and collective memory. And we can all do that. Only when we stop listening to people telling us what we can't do and realize what we can do. This is what I mean by us being the creative energy of the universe. We can create the society that we want. All that we need to do is to begin to brush away all of the thoughts and ideas, brush away all of the false premises, brush away all of that until we find that gold or that jade that exists at the center of all of our beings, that gold or jade that is who and what we really are. And when we find that, all of the other things will be much less important. We have a lot of things in this country. Even people who are somewhat poor have a lot more things than in other countries, but we don't have the one thing that we really need. And the one thing is a community of love and compassion. That is all that we need, and everything else will take care of itself. Love and compassion on three levels. One, love and compassion on the level of the self. That means loving ourselves right here and now, exactly as we are, with no change whatsoever. This is what is meant by agape love. Agape love is unconditional love. It is giving love without any expectation. First, it has to start with giving love to ourselves right now, with no expectation. And you can see agape love not by a feeling, but an action. We act lovingly to ourselves and kindly to ourselves and create lives for ourselves that'll help us grow and prosper just like many of us do for our children and our children's children. We begin to do that for ourselves. The second level is human kindness, agape, love to friends, to family, to the community, where we really begin to work so that we can all prosper and we can live in an atmosphere where we don't necessarily get rid of all the pain and suffering, but we lessen it greatly, because most of the pain, most of the fear, most of the anger can be dampened if we have a loving community and loving families that will support us and help us. That will provide the healing. And the third is the creating of justice in the world. You see, the idea of justice, the archetype of justice in the Hebrew scripture and therefore biblical, was not a scale with someone holding it. It was a river. The idea was that everyone should be moving together in a river back towards the source from which they came. Everyone didn't have to be alike. Everybody didn't have to go at the same pace. There would be little eddies and waterfalls and things like that. But the idea of justice was that we would all be moving towards beauty and love and greatness, back to that source from which we came, having really never left that source. That is the justice that we should bring about. Not the justice of a person holding a scale, which signifies that someone in power would be telling us what justice was and meting out justice. Not for the God that was known as the one who makes justice, which was changed to the judge in order to make it fit into the society in which the Greeks were located. It's the one who makes justice. It has nothing to do with a judge. That is how we begin to make justice, creating opportunities for all of these groups to move together towards life, life, love, hope, and fulfillment. And when this is done, I think we will have attained that place that the transcendentalists talked about when they said we had to transcend the common humanity and join back to what they called the oversoul. We were the souls. They were all that is the oversoul. But in reality, their philosophy was that's who and what we are. So during this season of lights, this time that actually celebrates the exact same thing I'm talking about, with another person, the divinity entering into the earth during the darkest times, and then going through all kinds of suffering and pain in order to relieve their brothers and sisters, it's time for us to really begin to remember that it is not a story about someone else either. It's all about us. It always has been about each and every one of us. And all those stories will always be about us, because we are that great, beautiful being that we've been waiting for. And now is the time, during the darkest times, right now, during the times of the most collective cognitive dissonance, that we should be the light and know that this dissonance is not something here to destroy us or drive us backwards. It's something to help us expand ourselves and move ahead, truly knowing what we are and creating a life that will be beneficial for ourselves, our children, our children's children, and now the whole earth itself. Namaste, everyone. Namaste.